The following is a sermon from Haven Heights Baptist Church in Wauseon. At Haven Heights, we believe that faith comes through hearing, and hearing through the word of Christ. As you listen to the sermon, we pray the Lord would use the preaching of his word to point you to Jesus and to strengthen your faith in him. If you're looking for a church home, we'd love for you to join us on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. For more information about our church, go to havenheightsbaptist.org or find us on Facebook. We'll be talking about COVID for the rest of our lives. And one of the many things we'll talk about with COVID is the wide range of symptoms that COVID has. To my knowledge, there's never been an illness with this wide range of symptoms. Everything from a rash to a runny nose, fatigue or insomnia, night sweats or the chills. It's all COVID. COVID looks different, but it's the same sickness. This morning, we'll be talking about unbelief. And nearly every case of unbelief looks different, but it's all the same sickness. And just like in any sickness, it must be cured. The cure for unbelief is God's word. And so if you have your Bible, I invite you to turn to John chapter 7, and we'll be in verses 1 through 24. After these things, Jesus was walking in Galilee. For he was unwilling to walk in Judea because the Jews were seeking to kill him. Now the feast of the Jews, the feast of the booths, was near. So his brothers said to him, "Move on from here and go into Judea so that your disciples may see your works which you are doing. For no one does anything in secret when he himself is striving to be known publicly. If you are doing these things, show yourself to the world." For not even his brothers believed in him. So Jesus said to them, "My time is not yet here, but your time is always ready. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify about it that its deeds are evil. Go up to the feast yourselves. I'm not going up to this feast because my time has not yet fully arrived." Now, having said these things, he stayed in Galilee. But when his brothers had gone up to the feast, then he himself also went up, not publicly, but as though in secret. So the Jews were looking for him at the feast and saying, "Where is he?" And there was a great deal of talk about him in secret among the crowds. Some were saying he's a good man. Others were saying, "No, on the contrary, he is misleading the people." However, no one was speaking openly about him for fear of the Jews. But when it was now the middle of the feast, Jesus went up into the temple area and began to teach. The Jews then were astonished, saying, "How has this man become learned, not having been educated?" So Jesus answered them and said, "My teaching is not my own, but his who sent me. If anyone is willing to do his will, he must know about the teaching, whether it's of God, or I am speaking from myself. The one who speaks from himself seeks his own glory, but he who is seeking the glory of the one who sent him, he is true, and there is no unrighteousness in him. Did Moses not give you the law? And yet not one of you carries out the law. Why are you seeking to kill me?" The crowd answered, "You have a demon. Who is seeking to kill you?" Jesus answered them, "I did one deed, and all of you were astonished. For this reason, Moses has given you circumcision. Not that it is from Moses, but from the fathers. And even on the Sabbath, you circumcise a man. If a man receives circumcision on the Sabbath, so that the law of Moses will not be broken, you are angry at me because I made an entire man well on the Sabbath? Do not judge by outward appearance, but judge with righteous judgment." I've entitled this sermon, "The Anatomy of Unbelief." Last week we watched as everyone walked away from Jesus, and they walked away from Jesus because they didn't believe in him. Our passage this morning is an extension of that passage. This morning we ask the question, why do people not believe in Jesus? And all throughout this passage, we see these people not believing in Jesus. Verse 5, his brothers don't believe in him. Verse 1, the Jewish leaders don't believe in him. Verse 13, the crowds don't believe in him. No one in this passage believes in Jesus Christ. And the question of the hour is, why? Why do they not believe in Jesus? For those taking notes, the big idea is this: the anatomy of unbelief. Three questions then to guide our time. Number one, what are the characteristics of unbelief? Number two, what is the cause of unbelief? And then number three, are there confirmations of belief? So first, what are the characteristics of unbelief? If we're here and we're wondering, what is unbelief? What are we even talking about? What is this? Well, the Bible shows us, and the Bible shows us the characteristics of unbelief manifested in three characters. So three different characters in this text show us what it means to be unbelieving. The first characteristic is leeriness. And the leery are unsure of Jesus. Now, they believe that Jesus is a good guy. They believe that Jesus is a powerful guy. They even believe that he's a miracle worker. But they're leery. Is he really God? In our text, the leery are the brothers of Jesus Christ. Verse 5, for not even his brothers believed in him. And that's really fascinating because his brothers know Jesus better than anyone. And his brothers know that there's no one like Jesus. They were there when Jesus turned the water into wine. And they heard all of these accounts of people coming back when Jesus fed the 5,000 in chapter 6. They saw with their own eyes Jesus heal people. They know that there is no one like him. And yet they're leery. And here's why. They watch with their own eyes as Jesus loses popularity. And they watch as the crowd went from 12,000 to 12. And they say to Jesus, if you are the one from God, wouldn't it be obvious? Wouldn't everyone know it if you were from God? And so they say, verse 3, Jesus, you need to go to Judea. And you need to prove that you are the one from God. You need to go to Jerusalem. You need to go to the center of our religion. You need to meet with the Jewish leaders. You need to school them. You need to tell them what's up. You need to do some better miracles than this. If you are the one from God, you would leave no doubt about it. And many are this way today. Many believe that Jesus existed, that he was a good guy, a great teacher, probably even a miracle worker. But when it comes right down to it, leery, because they say if he really was from God, there wouldn't be a doubt in the minds of anyone. Many of us remember the terror attack on 9/11, and we remember what happened in the days that followed all of these spontaneous prayer services. And many began to wonder, was revival going to break out, not only in the United States, but around the world? And all of these people were praying to Jesus. Is this going to be a turning point? Is this going to be revival? But it didn't happen. Because many began to think like this, and even say this publicly. Why are we praying to Jesus? Because if Jesus was really God, he would have stopped this from happening. It's leeriness. I just don't know if Jesus is really God. And it's not just out there. It's also in here. Our child dies, and we wonder, is there a God in the heavens? We get sick, and we wonder, does Jesus really care for me? Disappointment comes, and we wonder, is he really in control of all things? Who among us hasn't been leery? And when we are leery, it's unbelief. The second character of unbelief is the learned. Simply put, the learned don't believe in Jesus because they know better than Jesus. We meet the learned in verse 1. These are the Jews or the Jewish leaders. They're the educated, the elites of the day. And their job is to teach everyone about God. And they love it. They love to preach. They love to teach. They love people hanging on their every word. Well, they did love it until Jesus shows up. And when Jesus shows up, they lose their monopoly on religion. And although they hate that, they can stomach that somewhat, but here's what they can't stomach. This is what they can't tolerate. They can't stand the way Jesus teaches. Because Jesus teaches like this. You've heard it said, but I say to you. And Jesus says, you've heard their talk, but what I say, verse 17 is from God. And oh, how they can't stand this. And they say, we are the sophisticated. We are the educated. We are the enlightened ones. And they look at Jesus and they say, are you kidding me? You were born in a stable to unwed parents who didn't have a nickel and couldn't afford an education. Are you serious? Look at my degrees. Look at my pedigree. We are the ones who know. And just like then, today, many refuse to believe because they say we are the sophisticated ones. We are the enlightened ones. And with my degrees and with my pedigrees, are you kidding me? I know more than this Bible stuff. About a year ago, we were threatened with our second lawsuit. Word had gotten out that we were a supporter of LifeWise. And a man on the other end of the phone threatened to sue our church. And he wanted to sue our church for promoting LifeWise. And he was quite clear in his argument. He said, modern teaching clashes with the Bible. He said, the Bible teaches this, and we know this. And because they clash, the Bible has to be wrong. So the Bible is nothing more than myth and conjecture. In the 21st century, we know better, and we need to teach our kids the facts. Now, lest we say, well, that's only those people. That's only the professors and the atheists and the ACLU and the elites. Lest we say that's only them, we must admit that each of us can be the learned. And it's oftentimes so subtle that we don't even notice it. Every time we are worried or anxious, it's because we believe that God will get it wrong. And we say, you know, I know what God should do, but I'm concerned that he won't know what to do. And bitterness? Bitterness knows that God got it wrong. And worry, anxiousness, bitterness, it's all the same. And it claims, I know better than Jesus. And when we think like that, it causes us to doubt that he is really God. The third character of unbelief is the loudmouth. A loudmouth is a person who talks for the sake of talking, but they're not even committed to what they're saying. And we see the loudmouth in verse 12. Verse 12, there was a great deal of talk about Jesus in secret among the crowds. Some are saying he's a good man, and others are saying, no, on the contrary, he's misleading the people. A lot of talk and a lot of different ideas. When I was in high school, I took a debate class. And for one of the assignments, we were given a topic. And when we showed up to class, the teacher flipped a coin to decide if we would be on the pro side or the con side. So the topic was speed limit, 55 miles per hour. She flips the coin. I get pro, and it's my job to convince everyone that the speed limit should be capped at 55 miles per hour. Now, as you can imagine, there's not a lot of emotional investment in that. That's these people. They're just learning about Jesus Christ. Most of them have no idea who he is. And it's like they say, the topic of the hour is Jesus Christ. And they're just talking for the sake of talking, and there's no emotional investment. And we know there's no emotional investment because they do it in secret. When the authorities come by, they get strangely quiet. It's talk for the sake of talk. No emotional investment. And so don't miss this. It's fully possible to talk about Jesus and for it to be nothing more than talk. The Apostle Paul writes to the church in Corinth, and he says this, examine yourselves to see if you're really in the faith. And he says to the church, you talk a lot about Jesus. You preach about him. You pray to him. You sing about him. But is it just talk? Are you actually emotionally invested? Do you believe what you sing and what you say? Unbelief is characterized in many ways. And yet beneath every veneer is the same cause. And that's our second question. What causes unbelief? Number two, what's the cause of unbelief? The cause of unbelief is always the same. The cause of unbelief is me. Self. Unbelief puts self at the center. Just consider the characters of unbelief. They're only concerned with one thing, me. What does Jesus do for me? And the leery look at Jesus and think he should do more for me. And the learned look at Jesus and they say he needs to die because he doesn't agree with me. And the loud mouths, they say this Jesus is okay because he entertains me. Unbelief puts me first. If Jesus can help me, I'm into that. And if not, I'm not. Now, does that sound familiar? That's what we talked about last week. The crowds follow Jesus because they got fed. And when the bread stops, they stop. When Jesus says, no bread today, they turn away from Jesus and they no longer follow him. And they no longer follow him saying, well, you're not the Messiah. You didn't give us bread today. And we read that and we think, well, they changed. They changed from believing in Jesus to not believing in Jesus. But they actually didn't change. They didn't change because they never believed him in the first place. At no point did they see Jesus for who he was. They never saw him as God in the flesh. They never saw him as the one to whom they owed their life and they all. They only saw Jesus in relationship to themselves. How can this guy serve me? That's what's happening in this passage. Look at verse 2. This passage takes place around the Feast of Booths. Now that may not mean much to us when we read that, but that's the feast where they celebrate God's faithfulness to them. The feast is a reminder that while they were in the wilderness, living in booths or tents, when they were living in these tents of sticks and leaves and whatnot, these booths, when they're out in the wilderness, they remember that God provided for them. So the people of God were in slavery, and God sends the plagues, and he rescues them, and they're on their way to the promised land. And to get to the promised land, they have to go through the wilderness, and they're in the wilderness, living in these tents for 40 years. And it was miracle after miracle after miracle. The Bible tells us their shoes didn't wear out. And God fed them with bread from heaven and meat from the sky. And he gave them water from a rock. And they remember all of these miracles. And they remember all of God's faithfulness to them. For 40 years, God sustained us with miracle after miracle. His provision is undeniable. For 40 years. And they're in the wilderness for 40 years because they didn't believe. Over and over again, the people of God said, we want to go back to Egypt. Egypt was good. Back in Egypt, we had good food. Back in Egypt, we had nice beds. But out here, God is not doing enough for me. It's unbelief. And for their unbelief, God says to them, then you can stay here just a little while longer. They're in the wilderness for 40 years because they don't believe. And yet they saw there's no one like God. They saw the plagues with their own eyes. They watched as he split the sea. They saw his power. And yet their position is not submission. Their position is selfishness. God owes me more. When we lived in Louisville, I had a mentor who had a son who was an unbeliever. His son was about 13 years old and not a bad kid, just not a believer. Just sort of ambivalent to Jesus. Wasn't interested in going to church. Didn't read his Bible. Never wanted to pray. My mentor confided in me. I'm concerned for him. And he said, you know, we're in the golden years here that if he's going to come to faith, it's probably going to happen now. And he says, I pray for him all the time. Then he asked me, he said, what would you do if he was your son? If he was your son, what would you do to help him believe? And I said, well, have you thought about taking him to a place where he would see what a life without Jesus would lead to? I said, maybe like a prison or something like that. And I said, you could go there and you could point out, you know, a life without Jesus leads to situations like these. And not to scare him into the faith, but to help him see his need for Jesus. And I remember the strange look he had on his face as he looked at me and said, I don't think we'll be doing that. And I said, well, why not? And he said, because I want him to see Jesus as more than a means to an end. And he's right. To see Jesus as simply a means to a better life, that's not belief. That's just more of the same. That's unbelief. If he can help me, great. And if he can't, well, I didn't really want him in the first place. Unbelief fails to see Jesus for who he is, the King of Kings, the great I Am, the beginning and the end, the one to whom I owe everything. We've been talking about unbelief. We've said this is what unbelief looks like. We've said this is what causes unbelief. And if we are honest, we identify with all of it. And if we're honest, we say, there's unbelief in here. And if we've really been listening and truly been honest, we may even wonder, am I an unbeliever? We end our time with evaluation. Third, what are confirmations of belief? There are four confirmations of belief in the passage. Or said another way, if we truly believe in Jesus, we will experience these four things. So four things that confirm whether we are a believer or an unbeliever. Number one, those who believe in Jesus obey Jesus. Jesus goes to the feast, verse 10, nearly in secret, meaning he goes to the feast not to do great miracles, not to do sensational things, but simply to teach the people. And he teaches them how to live. Belief follows the teachings of Jesus, period, without discussion. And anything less than obedience is unbelief. Every time we disobey God, and that's Christians included, anytime we disobey God, it's an act of unbelief. And disobedience is unbelief because disobedience says, I know better than Jesus. Regular obedience confirms belief, and regular disobedience shows unbelief. Number two, those who believe in Jesus glorify Jesus. Look at verse 18. Paraphrased, the one who believes is the one who glorifies God. True belief wants Jesus to get all the glory. Unbelief is focused on self. What am I going to get? But true belief is focused on Jesus. I want to give him everything. This week I was on the phone with one of you, and you told me of some of the things that God has done in your life this week. And then you said, and I want to tell everyone I can find whether or not they want to hear it because I want to give God all the glory. That's belief. Belief understands it's not about me. It's about him. And it's all about him. And even my faith, even my believing, that's not about me. That's simply so that I can glorify him. Those who believe in Jesus glorify Jesus. Number three, those who believe in Jesus trust in Jesus. Trust is the whole business with the Sabbath stuff at the end of our passage. The Jewish leaders, they obey, they're hyper-vigilant to obey everything the law says. And then Jesus comes up to them and Jesus says, you are not nearly as righteous as you think you are. And Jesus tells them, you are sinners and you need God's grace and forgiveness. And the religious leaders say, you got the wrong people here. And Jesus says, are you sure about that? And Jesus tells them, verse 19, aren't you supposed to obey the Sabbath and not do any work on the Sabbath? They say, Jesus, of course we obey the Sabbath. And then Jesus says, well, what about circumcision? You're supposed to circumcise on the eighth day, right? And they say, Jesus, of course we do that. And Jesus says, but sometimes that baby's born 8 days before the Sabbath, and when the Sabbath comes, you actually break the law of the Sabbath in order to do the law of circumcision. And they say, Jesus, that is absolutely ridiculous. Of course we do that. Of course we break the law of the Sabbath to do the law of circumcision because that's more important. And then Jesus says, but when I do that, when I break the Sabbath to heal a person, you say I have a demon. I'm doing the work of the devil. You say that I'm in the wrong. And here's the point to all of this. The Jewish leaders had made themselves the authority. They believe they know what Jesus should do and when Jesus should do it. And they believe that many times Jesus does the wrong thing in the wrong way. And Jesus says, you missed the whole point. True belief trusts in Jesus. True belief submits to Jesus. And true belief even realizes that the ways of Jesus are sometimes mysterious. And true belief realizes that Jesus doesn't always do things the way I would do them. But true belief realizes what Jesus does is always right. Number four, those who believe in Jesus judge according to Jesus. Look at how the passage ends, verse 24, judge with righteous judgment. Jesus means judge yourself. Judge whether or not you believe in him. And this is where it gets difficult. Each of us comes this morning to the passage, if we're honest, each of us comes to the passage this morning as a mixed bag. And as we go through the confirmations, we say, well, I do that. I obey Jesus. I glorify Jesus. And I trust in Jesus. I do that. But then we also said, but I express characteristics of unbelief. I get anxious. I struggle to believe that God will be good. I struggle to believe that God is in control. And sometimes I go through the motions. I talk about God. I sing about God without even thinking about my words. And if we're honest, our judgment is this. I have moments of belief, and I have moments of unbelief. So how do we judge that? How do we judge where we stand? In the Gospel of Mark, a man comes to Jesus and he says, I believe. Help my unbelief. The man comes to Jesus and he says, I'm both. He says, I believe and yet I struggle to believe. And this is where we're at. We believe. We struggle to believe. And so what are we to do? Here's how we judge. True belief is not defined by an absence of unbelief. True belief is defined by asking for belief. It's not about the absence of unbelief. It's about the asking for belief. And the man asked Jesus, help me to believe. Real belief turns to Jesus and says, take away my unbelief and give me real belief. And when we turn to Jesus and we ask him to help our unbelief, that's the final confirmation. My belief in him is genuine. You've been listening to a sermon from Haven Heights Baptist Church in Wauseon. If you're looking for a church home, we invite you to join us. We gather on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. For more information about our church, go to havenheightsbaptist.org or find us on Facebook.